Okay, so we, yeah. So we are holding on Chof Amud Aleph, fourth line. In the middle of the topic about Tumah B'Tarah, specifically about how you can have Tumah can go through a window, that's at least a tefach by a tefach. We're talking about a window that was made for use, like to pass things back and forth and whatever. But if you have something blocking part of that tefach al tefach, then the Tumah will not go through, and we started discussing
yesterday. And if the window was for light, it could
be smaller. If it's light, then it has to be smaller. Then if it's a naturally made hole in the wall, like for example, water came and then made a hole in the wall, or mice or what have you, then it's larger, yeah. The bottom line is, if you have something blocking that space, part of that space, then the Tumah does not pass through, provided we said that A, the thing is not, that's in the window is not Makapal Tumah, and B, that you're Mevatel it over there. For how long you need to Mevatel it, that is a Machlokas. That's a Machlokas for Shoinim. Based on our Gemara over here, does it have to be something that you would leave there indefinitely? Or does it have to just leave, or is it good enough if it's something that you would just leave there for even one day or maybe a couple of days or whatever? Okay. Hello? So. Okay. No, it's not. It's cookies. Thank you. All right. So that's where we're holding. So Maestri, fourth line from the top of Chof Amud Aleph. The Gemara says Maestri. I have another contradiction then, another Braisa, which we're going to quote, which is going to list various things that could be in that window, where on the face of it, even if we're going to argue these things are not Makabel Tumah for one reason or another, but they're not on the face of it things that you're going to be Mevatel there. They're things that are going to stay there for a very short time. And yet we see that they can, that you, and yet we see the Braisa is listing them as things that they can block the window, that they're considered to block the window. Therefore, you see you don't need to Mevatel. Braisa says like this, Asavim Shatoshan V'Yinichan Bahaloi. If you have grass that you ripped out of the ground and place the detached grass in this window, Osha Olamei Alein Bahaloinus, or you have grass that naturally grew of its own in the space of the window, which this is one reason, by the way, why we're bringing this in, because the Gemara is going to end up pointing out that we learned in our Mishnah, you don't usually have grass near a window. You don't usually have plants near a window because the roots break up the soil, as we learned yesterday. So that's one of the connections of this whole sugya to our Mishnah.
No shortcuts. They can't just bring that part. You got other
things. Yeah. Okay. So Sha'olamei Alein V'Chaloinus, or the grass grew by itself near the window. Umatlonius Shein Ben Shalosh Al Shalosh. Also, if you have a piece of cloth which is less than 3 by 3 etzvos, which then it's not it's too small to be makabel tumah. Va'ever ha'basa hamdodolim. Three etzvos is less than a tefach. Yeah. Well, three thumb widths actually, but yeah. Va'ever ha'basa hamdodolim b'behemo v'chaya v'oshe hamdodolim b'behemo v'chaya. Also, another case would be if you have a limb or flesh that's hanging loosely off an animal or chaya, so it's still attached to the body. It's still But it's lying there in the window. We'll see each of these cases. We're going to go through and see what the scenario is.
Including a bird wing?
A wing is a separate thing. You can either have another case where a bird is sitting there in the window space. You wouldn't have a behemoth on chayah because they wouldn't fit in that space. But the Tosfos gives other reasons later on. We'll discuss later on. Tosfos gives a reason. Okay, Tosfos gives a reason later on why we're not mentioning the whole behemoth of chayah being in the window. We'll get to it later when we discuss. When we discuss the specifics of that case. But Ovid Kachavim Shiyasha B'Chaloin, also if you have a goy sitting in the window. Now a goy, Midrabanon, is considered Tomei. Midrabanon, goyim are considered like Zabim. However, Midoraisa, he's not Makabel Tumah.
Right.
Therefore,
he's not the Tomei also.
Therefore, he's not, well, right, he's not Matame, but he's not Makabel Tumah, which is more the point that we're talking about. We said anything that's Makabel Tumah, there are Rishonim who learn differently. There are Rishonim who argue that even something that's Makabel Tumah, Midrabanon, cannot be used to block the window. However, they would answer, fine, a goy is Tomei Midrabanan as a Zav. However, even Midrabanan, he's not Tomei, he can't become Tomei from Tumas Mess. If there's a mess in the same room as the goy, even Midrabanan, the goy is not going to become Tomei, so therefore he can still be Mamai.
Midoraisa and Midrabanan.
Midoraisa, Tumah is not relevant to a goy at all. Midrabanan, a goy is considered like a Zav. However, so one argument is, since Daraisa he's not Makabel Tumah, therefore it's not an issue. The other argument is, even if we say it, since Midrabanan he is, however Midrabanan it's just he's a Zav. He still has Midrabanan nothing to do with Tumas Mess. Therefore, he can still be considered to block the window to prevent Tumas Mess from going through from one side to the other.
Without Tumas Mess.
Right. Zav is a different kind of Tumah, yeah. Okay. Next, you have a baby born after an 8-month pregnancy that's lying there in the window. Now, throughout Shas, it's generally a commonplace fact that a baby born after an 8-month pregnancy is not viable. It's not going to survive. We learned about the details of it in Yevamos, and sporadically we've talked about here and there. There's details in it if the baby is fully formed than not, because then we consider it a baby that should have been born after a 7-month pregnancy, but he just was longer in the womb than expected. But whatever, we're talking about a premature baby. Baby.
How someone who's originating from Shalosh Klipot
Tumah
cannot become
Tumah? Adrava, because precisely because he's from Shalosh Klipot Tumah. You can't add any more Tumah to him. Only a Yid who has a Nefesh of the kid. Only a Yid who has a Nefesh other kid is capable of the Goy himself is not Tomei or Matame Majaraisa. Fine, because he's Shalosh Klipot Tumah. He's not relevant to that whole issue of Tumah V'Tahara. Tumah V'Tahara is where you're capable of being Tahar, and then you're in a place or a situation or whatever that contradicts that. The Goy is not capable of that in the first place.
He cannot become Tahar.
No?
So that's why he cannot become Tomei?
Yeah. Okay. Basically. Okay. Anyway, onward. Okay, so Ben Shmoina Hamunach Bachaloy, and if you have an 8-month baby that's lying there in the window, again, each of these cases we're going to deal with in the Gemara why we expect that it's going to be left there without being mevatel. But right now we're asking on the assumption that you're not going to. The 8-month baby, for example, you're going to pick up very soon. He may be lying there a few minutes, but you're going to pick him up soon enough. Why is he mevatel there in the window? If we established before that you need to be, whatever it is, you have to be able to be mevatel there for a greater or lesser amount of time.
Can I mevatel the baby?
That's what we have to figure out, right? Wait. Okay. Melach, also salt, or klicheres, also an earthenware utensil, where again the back side of it is facing towards the truma, so it can't be metame from that direction. The sefer Torah, or a sefer Torah that's lying there in the window. Kulam mamatin v'chalayin. All of those things can be considered to reduce the size of the window. So if the window, for example, was exactly a tefach by a tefach, and any of these things is lying on the windowsill, then that's it. The window is not a tefach by a tefach, and therefore the trauma can't go through from one side to another. Aval, hasheleg v'haborad v'haglid v'hakfer, but snow or various kinds of frozen water, that even if they fill up space, shelag is snow. Rashi, the words that Rashi uses to translate over here, there's a couple of different possibilities what the Rishonim give what each of these things is. Rashi says that barad is the word that Rashi uses for barad is French word for ice, glass. Kfar Rashi translates with a word that means hail. Usually you would think barad is hail, but apparently Rashi translates barad as ice and kfar as hail. And glid, Rashi says, is white ice that's not snow. So like frost, basically. Yeah, and that's in modern Hebrew. Anyway. Okay, so all those things, v'hamayim and water, kulon ein mematin v'haloy, none of those things reduce the size of the window space. What we mean by water, by the way, there's a few possibilities that Rishonim talk about. It can mean because the water itself should be mekabel tumah. So they talk about different possibilities. It can be, for example, the stream of water that's passing through the window so you don't have a keli. But the point is, the water itself is not memayit precisely because it's mekabel tumah. Or another possibility is maybe we're talking about dirty water, so it's not drinkable, therefore it's not mekabel tumah. A few different possibilities they talk about. Anyway, so the bottom line is, let's start going through these things. V'hasavim chazul v'hemtoi. Let's start with the first item on the list. We said grass. Isn't grass suitable for an animal? Why would you leave it in the window for any length of time? Why would you be mevatel it there? On the face of it, very shortly you're going to take it to feed it to an animal. The answer is bafrazta. Bafrazta. We're talking about this grass is a kind of bitter, poisonous grass which can't be used for animal food. Grass, there's different kinds of herbs that are poisonous. There's different kinds of herbs that are poisonous to animals, yeah. What about Osha Olomelehen? Fine. What about, though, we consider, Hagoy Sabah adds a detail, what about you could argue that you could use it for a fire? And the answer would be, like we said yesterday. Asavim means generically herbs or grasses. Now we're saying specifically the kind of Braisa must be talking about is the kind that are not suitable for animal food. So I go to the Braisa doesn't have to. It says asavim. We're meant to understand. Once we understand the concept that anything that you're not mevatel, each of these things, the Braisa is telling us something generic. We're going to refer it to a specific case because the Braisa presumes that we understand the underlying principle that it has to be something that you're mevatel there. Okay, Hagaris Habach adds a detail that you could argue you could use these poisonous grasses for firewood, and the answer is, let's say they're moist, they're damp or whatever, like we learned yesterday about the hay, therefore it's not suitable for that either. Okay.
And a big fire in Lush.
Yeah. And Lush, yeah, right. Okay, what about Osha Olomeleh? And what about, we're saying, if the grass grew there on its own, why would you leave it there? Kiven to Kosher Lakosel Shokta Lahu. Since grass growing near a wall is bad for the wall, as we learned yesterday, again, that's the connection with our subject of our Mishnah, wouldn't you Shokta Lahu, wouldn't you pick them and take them away? So Rabba answers, yes, but you can be talking about that the wall over here that has the window in it is the wall of a ruined house. So therefore, you don't care if the wall gets undermined. But the fact of the matter is, you could conceivably have in this ruined house, there might be a dead body, or vice versa, there might be in the house or the building or whatever next door, there is one, and then you're worried about the tumor going into the room. Yeah. Rapapa, I'm after the Kosu Yishu. Rapapa says you don't even have to say that. You could be talking about a wall with a window of an actual inhabited building. But fine, let's say you have a case where the grass actually grows more than 3 tefachim away from the wall, so therefore you're not worried about it undermining the wall, but then it bends over, the tips of it bend over. Imagine like you're talking like tall grasses like that. No, not over the wall. Towards the wall, yeah. You have like long grasses, like cattails or whatever. Well, then they're far enough away to not weaken the wall, and yet they stick up.
But when
they're close
rain,
enough.
It may drop on the wall, and that could weaken the wall.
What rain you're going to have regardless whether there's plants there or not. We were talking about yesterday, the problem is not the rain, the problem is the roots of the plants that undermine the soil. But if they're 3 tefachim away from the wall, they're not going to. So therefore, if you have the plants grow over here and they bend towards the wall, towards the window, there you go. The tops of them can be reducing the size of the window without being close enough to harm the wall. Okay. Next. Matlonius, the next thing in the list in the Braisa was pieces of cloth, which we said are less than three by three etzvos, so they're not makabel tumah. The question is chazalei lekriya delavusha. Okay, but don't they still have a possible use? You could conceivably use them to make a patch for a piece of clothing, so therefore you wouldn't be mevatel it. The answer is besmichta. You're talking about that these are very thick pieces of cloth. The Rambam apparently had a different girsa because he writes in Yad HaZakah, not that they're thick. Well, therefore, in other words, they're not suitable to be used for patches. The Rambam apparently had a different girsa because this is how he writes in Yad HaZakah, not smichta, but rather tinufta or something to that effect. They're dirty. So therefore, you would never use them for a patch. Okay, the question is, chazul umna, fine, but even then you could use them for a bloodletter, could use them, let's say, after we let blood from somebody, hello? You could use even a thick cloth to wipe off the blood or whatever. The answer is beriska. Yes, but we can be talking about that it's a rough, scratchy kind of cloth. So you would never use it on a bloodletting wound. Okay. Now, riska usually would mean something like sackcloth, which is rough. So the question is, Iberiska, Shane Ben Shalash Shalash, if you're talking about sackcloth, what do you mean mentioning 3x3 anyway? Shane Ben Abar Abar and Barley. The amount that should be mentioning is as long as they're not four by four tefachim. Because different kinds of materials have different amounts where less than a certain size of different materials is not makabel tumah. In the case of cloth, the amount is 3x3 etzvos, because less than that, you would never use it even for a patch. But with sackcloth, for example, the minimum that you can use for any useful purpose is 4x4 tefachim. So what are you mentioning shalosh al shalosh for? The answer is ke'ein riska. No, we don't mean that it's actual sackcloth. We just mean that it's a scratchy kind of material. It's similar to sackcloth in that respect. But not that it's actual sackcloth. It still is cloth. The shear for it is still 3x3. Except, practically speaking, because it's thick and also, or dirty, and it's also scratchy, therefore it has no other real use, so therefore you're just going to leave it there in that window indefinitely. Next, we said if you have a limb or flesh that's hanging off a domestic or wild animal, and that limb is sitting there in the window, the question is, the animal is going to run away. The thing is not going to stay there for any length of time, the limb. The answer is b'kshura. You can be talking about that the animal is tied there. The animal is tied there to a post or whatever in the ground near the wall. Okay, the question is shachit law. Fine. Won't a person come and shech the animal? The answer is mitzvaya. Okay, but we're talking about it's a tereif animal. It's not a kosher animal like a cow or whatever. It's a tereif animal like a dog or a horse.
Patch.
Oh. it's tied to the ground or to the wall or whatever, and it's a trade for animal, a donkey,
in
a horse. No, it's limb. The animal itself is standing on the ground, and one limb is sitting in the window. Okay. The question is still Mazrin Lo L'Nachri. So what if it's a trade for animal? You can still sell it to a guy. Then there's the kusha. We're talking about, though, that the animal is very scrawny. So why would a guy bother buying it in order to eat it? There's no meat on it. Okay, the question is, the question is, Pasuk Shodi Lo L'Klovim, fine, but won't you just chop off that limb, which anyway is hanging off the animal, and use it for dog food? The answer is, Kivin D'Ikka, Tzaba Alachayim Lo Ovid. You're not going to do that, because that would be Tzaba Alachayim. Now, which gets into the question, why don't we say you give the whole animal to the dogs? So a couple of different Mephoshim talk about
it.
Okay, right. So the Rivi Migash says that to kill an animal in order to feed it to dogs would be Tzav Balachai. The Rashba disagrees with that. He says, no, it's not so much that. It's just it's not usual to feed a whole animal to the dogs like that. So therefore,
Evi Minachai is exactly that.
Evi Minachai is if you cut off only the limb itself. Evi Minachai would be if you eat the limb. Like this, the limb is hanging off.
To the dogs?
To feed it to the dogs, not an Issa of Eid. No, dogs don't have the mitzvah of not eating Eid Menachai. That's human beings. Jews have a mitzvah not to eat Eid Menachai.
The Rebbe Gash said that...
Goyim also, right.
That
to shech an animal
to feed dog fodder,
he says, would be Tzav Alachai. A number of Acharonim argue with the Rebbe Gash on the basis of various other Gemaras. Okay.
But the obvious question was, of course, that you could sell it for dog food.
Right. I don't think so. I mean, the Acharonim talk about it a little bit. I don't think in general they agree with it. Onward. What about the next one? We have a bird that's sitting there in the window. We're saying reduces the space. Why? Parach v'azol. The bird is just going to fly away. The answer is the kosher. Again, we can answer like with the animal. The bird is tied there. Still, shockedly, won't you chef the bird in order to eat it? The answer is again, Vitame, we're talking about a today for species. Fine, Mazbin Leila Nahri, you'll sell it to a guy and he'll eat it. The answer is the Klanissa. We're talking about a Klanissa as a type of bird, also, like with the animal, it's a very scrawny type of bird. Nobody's going to bother buying such a bird in order to eat it. A what?
Hummingbird.
Yeah, let's say. Okay, the question is, Yohiv Leila Yanuka. Fine, still, you can take the bird and give it to a little kid to have as a pet. To have as a pet bird. The answer is the Misaret. We can be talking about that this bird is the type that scratches. It has sharp claws, and it doesn't, it won't play with you nicely, it'll just go scratching. Yeah, whatever. The question is, Klanissa loy Misaret. Okay, but a Klanissa doesn't do that. A Klanissa is not the type of bird that scratches, that claws. The answer is Kain Klanissa. No, what we mean is the bird is scrawny like a Klanissa, but it also happens to be the kind of bird that has claws, unlike a Klanissa. Okay. Oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, as far as the animal. So I mentioned before, we're talking about one limb of the animal sitting in the window. Why aren't we talking about the whole animal sitting in the window?
Okay.
So Tosfos gives the answer like this, and Tosfos asks actually the more general question, like we were saying before, why wouldn't you just take the whole animal and feed it to the dog? So we said the Rimi Gash says to the Vitab Al Chaim. Tosfos gives a different answer. Let's say we're talking about, for example, this animal is not just any animal. It's, for example, a monkey. It's a kind of animal that you would usually use as a pet to play with. So therefore, as long as it's suitable to use for that, you would do that. But if it's not suitable anymore, if it's already decrepit and falling apart, then you would usually expect to give it. You would usually give it to the dogs. But as long as it's still usable, as long as it's still a creature that you can play with or whatever, then you would do that. The Rimi Gash, by the way, gives a different reason why we don't say a whole animal in the window. He says, look, we're talking about only a window that's only a tefach by a tefach, a very small window. A typical animal is not going to fit in. Oh, he's got a mouse, for example. Fine, okay, but a typical animal of the kind we're talking about, that's too scrawny for a goat to bother eating or whatever, it's not really going to fit in here, a whole animal. It might, but it's not a usual thing. So therefore,
interesting that it's not Tzav Balachayim to tie the animal.
Well, you didn't necessarily tie it there. Somebody else tied it there. I was wondering why, wouldn't it be equally Tzav Balachayim to leave the animal tied there with arm or leg or whatever in the window? I haven't found anybody who addresses that either, why that would be more Tzav Balachayim than actually shechting the animal. I don't know.
The expression.
Right, okay, but still, the Rimi Gash apparently... still, the Dreaming Gosh apparently assumes that we're talking about a fairly smallish window. Okay.
Tissue.
Thank you. Okay. Onward. Okay, so we said the bird is, so we said the bird has to be as follows. Again, the bird has to be, it's a trait of species of bird, which is scrawny, and that claws, that attack, that scratches or whatever, and it's tied to the window. So therefore, with all of that, you're just going to leave it there. You're not gonna find any use for it. Next, we're saying the next one on the list is a guy who's sitting in the window, and he's sitting in the window. Question is, hold on. The question is, hold on, I'll tell you in a minute what the Rimi Gash says about this in connection with what he said before. Question is, the guy is just going to get up and go. Why would, the answer is the kapus. We're talking about the guy is tied there. Okay, the question is, another guy will just come and untie him. The answer is the mitzvah. Let's say that this guy is a mitzvah, not necessarily tzaras of tzara, but like he has some kind of contagious skin disease or whatever. So therefore, everybody's going to stay away.
That's why the guy died.
As a matter of fact, actually, no. We're not talking about the person in the window. We're talking about another man.
The other guy died.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And mind you, actually, I mean, Rabbi Gershom wants to say, unlike what we were saying before, that we're saying davka goy because goy is not makabel turma. Rabbi Gershom wants to say even a yid would work for this purpose. The reason why we're mentioning a goy is because mela, if the guy is a yid, then for sure because he's a mitzvah, nobody's going to want to come near him. But if he's a goy, you would think the goyim don't care about that. Nevertheless, they still want. Question is, Osi Mitzvah Chavri Shorlei. Fine, a fellow Mitzvah will just come and untie him. A fellow Mitzvah is not worried about catching the disease, he already has it. The answer is Ella, no. Forget about all those answers that he's tied or that he's a Mitzvah. No, Ella Bachavushe Malchus. No, we have to be talking about this goy who's sitting in the window is a prisoner of the government. Therefore, nobody's going to come and untie him and let him go because they're afraid of the government. And the Rimi Gash adds, therefore, you can say, now that is why, so we didn't want to say a whole animal in the window before because you wouldn't usually have a whole animal in the space. That's why we just had his hand or leg or whatever in the window. Whereas a person, it is common, the Rimi Gash says, that when the government has prisoners, that they force them into very tight and then into very tight spots like that. So therefore, conceivably, yes, you could have a guy who's jammed into that window.
One tefach?
Oh, maybe not literally one tefach. The point is, again, a fairly smallish window, though. Okay. All right. Next. The next one on the list was a Ben Shmona HaMunach B'chaloyin. We said a baby who was born after an 8-month pregnancy where he's not viable, who's lying in the window. Question is, Asi Imidarele. Won't his mother just come and pick him up and take him away? There's no bitzel over there. The answer is B'Shabbos. Yes, but we're talking about if the baby is there on Shabbos.
And
he's mukta, because since he's not expected to live, therefore he's mukta.
What do you mean? Pikuach nefesh.
Wait. Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Ben Shmoina Hareu Kevin, an 8-month baby is considered, now obviously this is nowadays when they have technology to keep premature babies alive, we're talking about in those days. Ben Shmona Hareu Ke'eben, an 8-month baby is considered like a stone, but also a talpa of Shabbos, therefore you're not allowed to move him on Shabbos. Aval, however, Imo Shoicha Olav Amani Kosei, but his mother can bend over him and nurse him with Nafsakana because of the danger. What kind of danger? So Rashi elsewhere talks about maybe we mean the danger to the baby's life. Okay, he's not dead yet, but first he's not going to live. But first he does need to nurse.
Could be the danger to the mother.
Most other Rishonim explain that no, rather we mean the danger to the mother. The pressure of the milk in her breast is going to be too much. So not really a danger per se, more of a tsar, but whatever. For that reason, we allow it. But other than that, the baby is going to lie there. Now, the question still remains, okay, this is only till Shabbos is over. What happens then? Aren't you going to move the baby? Tosef says that we're talking about, let's say the baby is Rahman al-Aslan Gosis, he's near death already. So therefore, by the time Shabbos is over, he's going to pass away, Rahman al-Aslan. Therefore, you may figure, look, you know what, Shom Tehei Kvodos, we may as well just make that spot, that window will just be his burial place, we'll just cover it up. Other Rishonim say not necessarily. This is where the Ritva gets the idea that not necessarily does it have to be that we're talking about something that you're mevatel there permanently, the way Tosfos is implying.
Right.
It's good enough if you're only going to be mevatel there for the day, which in that case you are, since the baby is mukta and you can't touch it on Shabbos.
This
you can't move it
the one
there. You get the where there, you get the one day. You're going to move him after Shabbos, but for Shabbos itself, he's bustle over there. Tosfos doesn't hold of that. Tosfos says that. Tosfos obviously holds that bitul has to mean something permanent.
Yeah, but so they're but wouldn't they have to say that they're gonna you're going to keep them there as a permanent fixture?
That's what they're saying. But go to Shiyamos Kodim Shiyetzah Shabbos, but Amar Desham Tehekvarase. So the person figures that that's just where we'll end up burying him.
Oh, I don't see it.
The last choice was at the bottom. After you
even. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Next, Melach. The next one on the list was salt that's in the window. Question is Chazile. You can use salt. The answer is Bimiruta. We're talking about the bitter salt. So therefore, it's not.
You know, salt that's not bitter.
Pure salt is salty.
It's always bitter.
No, it's not. Pure salt is salty. It's not bitter. But you have, I don't know, Steinsaltz points out in the notes on his Gemara that you have, if you get salt from the sea, as you often do, then yeah, it's mixed in with various other magnesium chloride and whatever else, and yeah, it gives it a bitter.
That's
about
the Yamamela.
Okay. Yeah.
Toxic salt.
True. Yeah. Okay.
He went to the infirmary there.
Next, the question. Yeah, so did I. I got some of it in my eyes. Yeah, and not to the infirmary. I didn't have to go, but I my son actually had to go to the, whatever. Okay. And the Yamamela. Yeah, he scratched his leg over there, and yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Gunshti, I think, got salt in it.
And it's very bitter.
Yeah. Okay.
Much
onward. Chazula Otis, okay, but you can ask that even bitter salt is still usable for tanning leather, so therefore you'll take it out of the window and use it for that. The answer is the Ispakotzi. What we can be talking about, but there's also thorns mixed in with the salt. So you try to use it for tanning leather, you'll scratch up your hands. Okay, now comes the question, which again makes it relevant to our Gemara. Kivin de Kasha Lakosel Shakla, since salt is bad for the wall, as we learned yesterday, then you would take it away from there inevitably. The answer is the Yasva Chasva. Fine, but you're talking about, let's say, the salt is sitting on a piece of earthenware, on a shard of earthenware. Okay, the question is Chasva Gufa Teichut. Then why do you need to bother mentioning the salt at all? The piece of earthenware itself should be considered.
Yeah.
It itself will take up space in the window and make it less. The answer is the Lespa Shiura. We're talking about, though, that the piece of earthenware itself is too small. It doesn't have the requisite shiur. It's Kedetanan, as we learn in the Mishnah, that when it comes to the dinim of Shabbos, now you have several chapters over there in the middle of Masechta Shabbos that talk about different shiurim for different types of things that a person might carry out on Shabbos, where each kind of thing, there needs to be a minimum size of the thing in order to be chayav for the malacha of Beitzah, because usually anything less than that is not usable, and therefore you can't consider it to have any significance, unless you yourself decided to keep a piece smaller. Let's not get into that issue. Anyway. So each thing has its own shear, and kedetan, we learn in a mission there, cheres, the minimum size of a piece of earthenware for that purpose, is kedelitin ben tzim lachaveri, is enough to be able to put between one tzim and the next one. There's a few different explanations of what a tzim is, but Rashi over here explains like this. You have, let's say, in a window, you don't keep the window completely open, you put bars, you put bars of wood or whatever in the window, in between, then you put, as spacers, you put little pieces of earthenware around the edges of the window as spacers between one bar and the next to keep them a certain distance apart. So therefore, over here, in other words, so you have a piece of earthenware and then a bar, then another piece of earthenware and a bar and so forth. So therefore, those pieces of earthenware have a minimum size. And then Rashi also adds you smear over them with plaster, not plaster, whatever, with mortar, whatever. The bottom line is that it has a minimum size. Less than that, it can't be considered as something that would reduce the size of the window. Tosfos asks on that, what are you talking about? What is the din of how big a piece of earthenware has to be considered significant for Shabbos, for carrying on Shabbos? What does that have to do? As long as it's big enough to block part of the window, it should be considered a blocks part of the window. So therefore, So Tosfos explains differently. Tosfos gives the girsa not kiditnan, but vichiditnan. That the Gemara just wants to inform us, you should know there's a minimum size piece of cheret below which nobody's going to bother using it, therefore he's not going to bother taking it out of the window.
The vav makes it
like this. The cheret has no shear. And where do we see, in other words, it's too small for anybody to bother even taking out of the window. And where do we see that a piece of cheret has a minimum size that below that size, nobody's going to bother with it? We see from that Mishnah in connection with Hilchos Shabbos.
So you think kiditan would be araya directly connected?
Not araya, but...
Vichiditan
is a side thing, sort of, yeah. No, not really. Kiditan, the way Rashi has it, would mean that if the piece of earthenware is not large enough for the dinim of Hilchos Shabbos, then it's also not considered large enough to block the window. That's what Rashi is implying. where Tosfos says that no, there are two things are independent of each other, but practically speaking, if the piece of earthenware is smaller than that size mentioned in Shabbos, then nobody's going to bother taking it out of the window, and therefore and therefore they're going to be mavat. Okay. Yeah, Tosfos brings other gersaris as well. Anyway. I mean, there are other Rishonim also point out you can have what the Gemara may mean is, for example, let's say the cheres itself is too small. If you were to measure the window with a piece of cheres in it, it's still a tefach by a tefach. You still need the pile of salt on it to make it less than a tefach by a tefach. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next one, kli cheres kozile. You're saying that if there's a kli cheres sitting there in the window, a whole kli that is, then it blocks the window. The question is, kozile, it's something that you can use. You're going to take it out of the window and use it. The answer is dimetanis. Yes, but we're talking about that it's dirty. So therefore, you're not going to use it. Yeah.
Or you can clean it.
Yeah, earthenware, once it becomes dirty, is not really cleanable.
They're trying to be shallow of the salt being on the windowsill itself.
Right. Okay, the question is chazil umna. Okay, but even a dirty earthenware container, a bloodletter could use it to catch the blood. The answer is demonakin. We're talking about it has a hole, so therefore even a bloodletter can't use it. Okay. Next,
so dirty and
it has a hole. Okay. Next, sefer Torah chazil mikra. Why would you leave a sefer Torah permanently in the window? That's something you could learn from. The answer is bebalu. We're talking about it's a worn out sefer Torah. Okay, the question is, v'haboy gniza. So you have to put it in gniza. The answer is shom tehe gnizasa. We can talk about that. The person is deciding, you know what, I'll make that its place of gniza. Here also is where the Ritva says, we're not necessarily meaning that he's saying, I'm going to leave it there for gniza permanently. It might be good enough. He's saying temporarily, it'll be left there for now until I'm able to get to the Shemus repository or to the Beis HaKvaros or whatever and bury it properly. But even there, he's still being mavapal it there for the time being.
No, Tosfos
evidently would disagree with that and say that it means literally Shabbat Kordasa, that it means he plans to leave it there permanently.
Tosfos has no problem with
it. Apparently not. Okay. So far we've dealt with that entire Braisa, and we've shown how each thing in the Braisa, in fact, is something that you're going to be mevatel there, and therefore it can block the window. Okay. Now we're going to go on to another deal. Since we're talking about things that block windows or things that can be used for mechitzas, sort of, so now we're going to go on to a related concept.
Here we learn that salt is still not something that's going to corrode a wall
as long as it's on the cleft.
We learned that salt is going to corrode
a wall, but that's why you
wouldn't. It's not going to not corrode.
Right.
We thought that maybe it would not corrode the wall, and then we realized
yes.
It could be on
yes.
We also learned that the seeds growing into the wall are also not going to not corrode the wall because
they're either.
We learned that
it's planted over to the side, or that's a coast of horror, we said that it's a wall of a rune, and therefore you're not worried about it getting damaged.
Okay. So we found out there's no contradiction.
Right. Tosfos, by the way, on Omer Aleph points out, salt is not makabel tumah because it's not something that you can eat by itself. It's something that you only eat together with other things. Therefore, you can't say that it's makabel tumah, it's food, and therefore,
yeah.
All right. Omer Rav.
It's not considered a food.
Yeah. Okay. Omer Rav. Bakol oisim mechitza. You can use anything to make a mechitza, for example, for Hilchos Shabbos, or some of the say also for matters of tumah v'tara. Chutz mi melach urvav. Except for salt or grease, because salt will scatter and grease will melt, so therefore they can't be considered permanent. Or Shmuel amafil melach, whereas Shmuel says no, you could even use salt
for
mechitza. Amar Papa v'loy pligi. So Papa says actually Rav and Shmuel are not really arguing because they're talking about two different kinds of salt. Haba melach zoymes, haba melach stroiknis. One is talking about salt of Sdoim. The other is talking about salt of Estroikness, is the name of a place where it comes from. Melach Sdoim, as Rashi says, is hard and thick like a stone. Therefore, it can make a permanent wall, a wall that has enough permanence. So that's the kind Shmuel is talking about. Rav would be talking about Melach Estroikness, which isn't quite so strong. There's other places, by the way, where Rashi seems to say the other way around, that Melach Zoymis is finer and Melach Stroikness is coarser. So Rabbi Akiva Eger in his notes over here in Agoisa in his Agoisa over here brings up the question and wants to change the gear. And Rashi, a couple of other Achronim deal with it and they answer maybe that's just it. Because Melach Zoymis is more pure salt and other minerals or whatever, there's very little water in it. Therefore, when you pulverize it, it pulverizes really fine. For example, therefore, you can't use it for kashering meat. You need coarse salt for that. Whereas melachas dreiknis, it starts out weaker than melachas domus. It can't make a permanent structure. But if you were to grind it up, you end up with coarser salt, and then with the kind that you can use for kashering, for example. Okay. However, v'hashta d'amar Rabba, but now that we find that Rabba said, oisa adam shnei tziburim melach, a person is allowed to make two piles of salt, each one at least 10 tefachim tall, in front of a mavri. Now, we know a mavri, in order to be able to carry it in on Shabbos, one of the ways is you can have a koira, you can have a beam, a horizontal beam going across the front of the mavri. So, let's say you don't have anything to put the beam, let's say you don't have anything else to put the beam on top of, there's no hooks or whatever sticking out of the wall, and the walls themselves up there are too tall to put the beam on top of. So you can make, for example, two piles of salt, and then you can put the korda on top of those two piles of salt, because each one will help the other one stand. The melach will hold the korda up, because they're piles of salt, and the korda, because it hangs over the melach, will prevent it from dissolving.
Melach gets to eat the wood.
Let's say it's not wood. Let's say you use metal. Let's say you use something else. Whatever.
Wood will compact the salt.
Yes, it'll compact. Yeah, it'll hold it in place.
Structurally, it'll hold.
Yeah. Okay, eventually, over years, it'll wear away. Fine, we're not worried about over years. Okay. So once, now that we find that Rabba said that, I feel a melech hasterikness, and you don't even have to say that only melech doimus can be used for a mechitza. Maybe even melech hasterikness can. The loy pligi, but there's still the weaker kind, yeah. The loy pligi, but it's still Rav and Shmuel are not necessarily arguing. Hod if a koda, hod like a koda. They can be talking about whether there in fact is a koda on top of it or not. If there isn't, then like Rav said, you can't use salt because it'll dissolve after a while, it'll fall apart. As opposed to if you have a koda on top of it, that's where Shmuel is saying you could even use salt. Different Mephoshim talk about when we said before about salt reducing the size of the window. Is it the same kind of thing? It does have to be melach zoymis or melach zoykinis with a piece of wood on top of it or not. Or maybe there's a difference. Maybe there's a difference between reducing the size of the window versus making an entire mechitza. Maybe to make an entire mechitza, you need something that will actually stand for a length of time, whereas just to block the window, it doesn't need to have that structural stability. Just a pile of salt would be nice. Okay. All right. Now going back to the topic of our Mishnah and about different things that you have to keep away from somebody else's wool. The Mishnah said, "Mavchikenes erechayim dimo min ashechev shein abom min arechev." We said that you have to keep away, if you have millstones on your property, you have to keep them away at least 3 tefachim from the bottom stone, which equals 4 tefachim from the top stone. Because like we said, the top stone is 1 tefach narrower on all sides. Okay. Question is, my timer, why should you have to do that? The reason is mishum tiria, because of the vibration. When you turn the millstone, it vibrates the ground, and therefore it can shake down the wall. The problem with that is, what about though? We learn in a braita that what if it's a rechaim shochamur? So Rashi says that means the kind of millstone that is turned by a donkey. There were large millstones that you do by hand or whatever, and then you had smaller ones that you'd have a donkey. The large ones are the ones which are on the face of it we're talking about in the Mishnah. But a Braita says that a smaller one of a chamur, you need 3 shloisha minis deroivil. You need three tefachim from the Itzroivil. Rashi describes it like this. This kind of millstone, Rashi says, you have a wooden frame around it, and that wooden frame, that base is called the Itzroivil. Then you have the millstone. Then on top of the millstone, you have a funnel, which is what we call the kelis over here in our Gemara. You have a funnel, which you pour in the grain into the funnel. It goes between the millstones. It gets ground up over there. Meanwhile, the chamor is turning it. So we're saying you need shloshim in Estroyville, shein abam in a kelis. You need 3 tefachim away from the Estroyville, namely 4 tefachim away from the kelis. Again, because the kelis is set back 1 tefach from the bottom. So you have to ask, it's a smaller kind of mill. What kind of vibration is there? No, elamishum kola. No, we have to answer, the problem is the noise. What noise, Rashi says, is either the noise of you have to get the donkey to keep on working, you have to yell at it or whatever, or the sound of, or the noise of the millstones themselves. Either way, that noise can also damage the wall. Tosfos has a whole different understanding from Avinu Chananel that chamor over here does not mean a donkey. chamor over here, according to Tosfos, does not mean a donkey, but rather it means a wooden frame that you have the rechayim are built on top of. Yeah, Tosfos mentions there's a few different places in the Sefer Kalim where it uses the word chamor to mean a wooden frame like that something is built on top of.
Which would be weak.
Maybe it's more chomer, maybe it's just no, because I guess it's probably more just because, you know, you can think of a donkey as a beast of burden. You would use it to put loads on top of it. And by transference, you know, this is something that you're putting something like a millstone on top of.
Yeah, in a shop they have something called
at face value. They use them. Coil is a tablet. Type of hezek to the wall and tyranny.
Fine, but well, I'm right. Okay, so
he's not suggesting that the vibration of the coil itself is like the wall.
It might.
We're talking about a wall. We're not talking about fine glass that can shatter.
Okay, fair enough. There are different Rishonim that have different Yersois over here, whether it's Ella Mishum Kala or whether it's Mishum Kala. Are we saying that even with the Rechaim Shachamur, you have both the Tiria, the vibration, as well as the coil, the noise? Or is it only that we're saying forget about the vibration? There isn't vibration when it's Shachamur, but there is the noise.
You know, with the perimeter wall, what kind of coil has a coil?
It's not a neighbor issue, but apparently an ongoing noise like that, eventually the sound waves. Apparently, that's
vibration.
Right.
So it's a similar type.
But, right. In that sense. Yeah. Anyway, Tosfos has a whole different explanation over here. The chamur means the base of means you have a rechaim that doesn't sit directly on the ground. It sits on a wooden base. By the way, I mean it's the same kind of thing. For example, in English, you know, you have a jack to lift a car. Where do they get the name for that? Because you have it replaces like a person named Jack who might help you lift up the car. Similar idea. Yeah.
Probably English, not American.
No, but okay.
Jack is English.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so therefore, Tosfos explains similar idea. The bottom line is, if you have the rechaim sitting on this wooden structure, it's not going to cause so much vibration, but you still have the problem of the noise. Then we said that tanur shloshim in akulya shein abomin asafa. Then we said that if you have an oven on your property, it has to be at least 3 tefachim away from the kulya, from the bottom edge of it, which equals 4 tefachim from the top edge, away from the wall. Or, according to Tosfos, kulya meant the part where it sticks out, in the middle. So, Amar Abaye Shmamin Akulya to Tano Tefach. You see from that, then, that the kulya of an oven is a tefach. Sticks out one tefach, further than the top edge. My nakamina, what's the nakamina? That mamekachomemke. As far as buying or selling, if you're selling somebody an oven, it has to meet that specification.
Meaning not less, not more?
Not less, for sure, and maybe not more either. Yeah, a person is entitled to a standard type of oven. Joseph says they didn't need to mention that about millstones, because it was very obvious how millstones are constructed. It's less obvious, I guess Tosfos is implying that between the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, maybe the style of ovens changed a little bit, and it wasn't necessarily that you always have that one tefach setback, but Abaye is pointing out that the Mishnah is implying that that's how it happens. Okay. Mishnah says.
So it's not like Minig HaMedina or whatnot. You know, it's in the contract. If it said this term, this is what the definition would be, unless there was a difference in...
So I guess if everybody starts building their ovens differently, then yeah, you would go according to Minig HaMedina. But as long as
today's contract, if it says the word tanner, I'm sure it would mean...
Yeah, it would mean something completely different, obviously, yeah. Or type of tanner, by the way, that opens in front is something that Gemara calls it in a number of places, a purni, which is actually related to the word furnace. Yeah. Okay.
Tanner
is a Hebrew word.
Cone.
Yeah, it's a cone-shaped thing. Mishnah says, Lo yamid adam tanner b'seich habayis, a person is not allowed to put an oven in his house, elim kin yeshav gabav goyva abam, unless there is at least 4 amas, a clear space from the top of the oven until the ceiling. Now, Rashi learns that the issue we're talking about over here is, even we're talking about, let's say, we talked about it briefly, we talked about it in Bava Kama, in Bava Messiah, yeah. Okay, now, there's two major different approaches that the Rishonim have, what the problem would be here. Rashi learns the problem is like this. Even let's say the entire house belongs to you, even let's say, fine, there's a second floor, maybe that also belongs to you. to you. You could say, fine, it's my property. If I want to burn down my house, it's my problem. It's my problem. However, the other neighbors can tell them no because you end up burning down our houses as well. That's Rashi's approach. Many other Rishonim take the view that no, we're specifically talking about over here a case that Rambam, for example, learns this way. We're specifically talking about a case where the second floor belongs to somebody else. So if you have, if it's a one-story house or it's a two-story house and you own both floors, you know, hey, do whatever you want. You want to take the chance of burning down your house and dealing with the insurance company, go right ahead. But if somebody is living upstairs, you don't have the ability to do that.
If somebody
else owns the top floor, then you on the bottom floor can't put your oven in your house unless there's at least 4 amas of clear space.
But if you own the top floor.
But if you own the top floor, according to that way of looking at it. No. So the tenant, you rented him the place. I mean, if you own the whole place and you live on both floors, you have a townhouse, you know, then. Next, what about if you're putting the oven on the second floor? So then you have to have at least 3 tefachim of plaster under of a plaster mortar, whatever the flooring, the thing above the subfloor underneath it. Same idea, so that the heat doesn't burn through and set the ceiling beams on fire.
Right.
Or akira. Well, not
plaster. I
asked
you that question. The plaster can be heated at very high temperatures.
So not plaster per se. Maziva doesn't mean plaster, really. It's a better word for it, mortar. Enough of it is reasonably fireproof. So yeah, once you have 3 tefachim in it. Over kira tefach. If it's a kira, if it's not an oven, but rather it's a stove, then you don't make as big a fire in it. Therefore, all you need is 1 tefach of maziva underneath it. Different Rishonim argue, what about how much space would you need above it? Is it the same kind of thing? You would need only 1/3 of 4 amas, or is it maybe the same 4 amas? The imhizik v'shalom mashahizik. If even, so let's say you put the oven, you had the amount of space above it, and so forth, and still it ended up causing damage. V'shalom mashahizik, you still have to pay for what you damaged. Now, the Rif asks on this. Now, we learned in Bava Kamma that, let's say, for example, you're building a fire in your yard, and you leave enough space around it, so there's enough of a fire break, and all of a sudden a wind comes like we had today, and unexpectedly makes the fire spread.
Right.
Then you potter because it was an oinus, because you did what you were supposed to. Why are we here? Are we saying that even you left the amount of space? So the Rif says like this. The difference is there it's a one-time thing you're making this fire. Here we're talking about the habitual thing all the time. You have this oven, therefore, yes.
And if you open your window, there's also a strong wind coming.
Yeah,
fire upstairs.
Yeah. Rib Shimon, call Shurim Elu, Elashim Hizik, Potam Lashalom. Rib Shimon says, no, the whole point of these Shurim is that the Chachamim are giving you amounts where once you make the proper amount of space or maziva or whatever, then you're possible. Mishnah continues. A person is not allowed to open a bakery or a dyeing store. Under somebody else's oitzer, under somebody else's storehouse. A storehouse, as we're going to see in the Gemara, is typically means someplace where you store wine or oil or grain. Because Rashi says the reason is, well, specifically those things. We're going to talk about in the Gemara what about other kinds of things. But Rashi learns the problem is that the smoke is going to damage them. Tosfos earlier talks about it's not the smoke, it's the heat could damage them. No, because the difference is, we're going to see in a second. Void refus bucker, you're also not allowed to make the ground floor into a cattle stable, and when the other guy has an oitzer upstairs, because then there's the heat or the smell or whatever. The emes, the yayin hitiru, now, in truth, meaning that this is a halacha l'moshe mitzinai, if the guy upstairs has an oitzer of wine, then it's mutter to have downstairs your bakery or your dyeing place. Why is that? Because, as the Gemara is going to say, whatever it is downstairs makes the wine better. So that's the thing. Rashi learns that we're talking about smoke. That's what leads Tosfos to ask. We know from various other Gemaras that smoke makes wine deteriorate. Therefore, that's what makes Tosfos say we're talking about the heat. The wine, so fine, heat improves wine.
There's no smoke now.
It's not a matter of smoke, it's a matter of the heat rising. Yeah. Have a low refus bucker, but still, even in the case of wine, you can't have a cattle stable underneath because the smell will give the wine an off taste or an off smell. Yes. Gemara says, "Valtanya v'kir v'tanra bar v'kir shloisha." What about though? We learned in the Mishnah if you have a tanner on the second floor of a house, you need 3 tefachim underneath. Then a kira, you need 1 tefach. But a braisa says, "V'tanu rabo v'kira shloisha." If it's a tanu, you need four tefachim of maziv underneath it, and if it's a kira, you need three tefachim of maziv. A kira is a stove top. It's a stove top. So it's a, you have it's shaped more like a box, unlike a tanu, which is shaped like a cone. Like a truncated cone, a kira is shaped more or less like a stove, like we're familiar with. You have in the bottom part of it is where you make the fire, and then on top you have a hole over there which is the girder where you put the pot. Actually, a kira is actually where it has space for two pots, and it has a space for only one pot called a kupa. Anyway, yeah, similar idea. Okay, so the Braisa says that you need four tefachim of maziva under a tanu and three under a kira. Our Mishnah said you only need three and one. I'm going to buy it. Tanya hibe d'nachtoim. No, but that Braisa is talking about an oven or a kira that is used by bakers, where they're constantly firing it up. The tanu d'idam ki kira d'nachtoim. So a regular oven, like a typical person uses in their house, is the equivalent of a kira used by bakers, because a baker uses his kira so much more than a regular person at home, that therefore you need the same amount under a baker's kira as you would under a regular person's tanner. And then for a baker's tanner, you need even more, four as opposed to three.
But they don't need more than a person's
tanner. It's not the fire isn't any bigger, but it's used more. Yeah. Then the Mishnah said, "Lo yiftach chanus kola." We said that you can't open a bakery or a dyer's shop under somebody else's oitzer. Tana, we learned in a braisim. Or we said also barn. Yeah, Tana, we learned in a braisim. How is the repet? Kademus oitzer mutter. If the barn was there before the oitzer, then it's allowed. We learned that the other day. We said that even Rava would agree with that because we said dira shiny. Either we said you can't expect to limit a person what he can do in his own house, or we had the Rimigash's explanation that it's not usual for a person to turn their house into an oitzer, and therefore he didn't have to consider the possibility that one day there may be an oitzer up there. Boya baya. Now Abaya asks some questions. Let's say the person upstairs, he didn't actually make his oitzer yet. Let's say though he swept out and sprinkled water over there, which is preparation. You want the place to be clean before you make it into an oitzer. So he's preparing to make it an oitzer, but he didn't actually make it yet. At that point, are you still allowed to put your bakery or your refes bucket or whatever downstairs? Can you say, well, I came here first, therefore I'm allowed? Or can the other guy say, yeah, but you can see I'm preparing for an oyster, so you're not allowed to?
He's preparing for that. But
the oyster is not there. Another question. Riva b'chaloinet. Okay, another question. Riva b'chaloinet. What happens if you put a lot of extra windows? Rashi learns we're talking about the person upstairs. So we're talking about, let's say, so not just he swept out and mopped the place and whatever and got it ready. Let's say he also went and renovated and put in large windows, like you would want for an oitzer. You want it to be airy, so stuff doesn't spoil. So therefore you're showing. So therefore by that he's showing even more that he plans to turn it into an oitzer.
Ahead of the other.
Still, what would be the din? The Rashba brings from Rebbeinu Hananel. What? Yeah, when we're done. The Rashba brings from Rebbeinu Hananel another possibility. It means that the person downstairs put in a lot of extra windows. Can he argue, well, now that'll dissipate the heat, therefore you shouldn't have a problem with me having my bakery or whatever downstairs? Or not? Yeah. What about another case? Aksadra tachasa oisamahu. What happens if you have an open area, an aksadra, which has no walls or three walls or whatever, it's a big open space, tachasa oisa, under the oisa. In other words, you have a three-story building. You have the ground floor is the one downstairs wants to turn into a bakery. Then you have an aksadra. Then you have the place that the one upstairs wants to turn into an oisa. Does the one downstairs have the ability to argue, look, that aksadra is pretty well going to dissipate any heat or smoke or whatever that I generate, therefore it shouldn't cause you a problem for your oyster. Or maybe not. Maybe even then it's a problem. Or bana al yagav beis mahu. What happens if he built a second floor on top of his house? Meaning, again, Rashi learns that, let's say, for example, so we're talking about that you have the person downstairs. Now you have, let's say, for example, so we talked about if he mopped and swept the top floor. We talked about if he made more windows. Let's go even further. Let's say it's not only making more windows, if he built a whole second floor over there. Let's say he owned the airspace to begin with. He has the right to build a second. The fact that he's building a whole floor there demonstrates that he wants on the second floor shows that he wants to make it into an oitzer. So maybe then at that point, the guy downstairs can't make a bakery there. Or maybe not. The fact is, there's no actual stuff in the oitzer there yet. Again, the Rashba brings that maybe we're talking about Bon Al Yagavadeso is maybe we're talking about the person downstairs. What if, for example, you have one downstairs, he has his ground floor, he builds an aliyah on top of it, and then on the second floor, and then he's saying now there'll be a, and then you'll eventually go to the third floor, and you'll put your oitzer there. Fine, but by putting a whole second floor there, which is going to stay empty or whatever, or I'm making that any heat or whatever that I cause downstairs in my bakery is not going to affect you. So all these questions take. What does it mean, teku? So the Rambam says that it means, therefore, you can't, the guy downstairs shouldn't make his refet bakar or his bakery or whatever over there, but if he did under any of these circumstances, you can't force him to close it. According to the Rosh, it means rather that, what does it mean according to the Rosh, if I remember correctly, according to the Rosh, it means he shouldn't do it in the first place. I mean, means that we can prevent him from doing it. Yeah. I think that's what the Rosh says. I don't remember for sure, but yeah.
Nowadays, there's no point because there's a special assumption thing. So like, that's
true. Yeah, that might well be. Yeah, yeah, bent, yeah, 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 bent fans and whatever. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
All right.